What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to the 485th episode of the Sales Podcast. I'm Wes Schaefer, the Sales Whisperer, your host. Today, we have the introvert's edge to networking. Work the room, leverage social media, develop powerful connections by Matthew Pollard. This was a great interview. I had a lot of fun talking with him. You know, it's so crazy that most people would say I'm an extrovert, and that's mostly right. But I also sat around and wrote a 700-page book on Infusionsoft and wrote another book, The Sales Whisperer Way, and I make these podcasts. And, you know, this is done mostly alone. I hand off parts to my team. You know, my mom helped proofread both books and edit them. I've got a VA team that helps with my HubSpot. I have contractors that help with onboarding of HubSpot and Infusionsoft. I've got a VA team that helps with the finishing up of these episodes. But, you know, I've worked from home for 20 years. I am very comfortable being home with a book. I need the unwinding time in solitude. So I like this. I like his approach. He's a super laid back guy. I had some internet troubles when we first had this scheduled, and he rolled with that. We push it to the next week. This book is going live right now. So this episode is going live on the 19th. So the day his book goes live, I'm doing two episodes back to back to support another book launch. So listen to this one quickly and bookmark it, because I've got another one coming up from some interesting dudes in jiu-jitsu. So that got my attention. So it was cool talking with them as well. But Matthew's book, he's written several books. The guy is a superstar. He's still pretty young. And a lot of his focus is doing things in sales as an introvert. So I am totally down with that. So you are in for a treat. All right. If you would like some help, either one-on-one or for your group, hit me up at thesaleswhisper.com. Just go to the contact us, and you'll get a time to talk to me, sent to you. Just pick it, right? Set it on the calendar. Just show up. I'm not too good with patience or forgiveness. When people skip out, fortunately, it doesn't happen too much, but it does happen. And then if you are ready to jump into it, you want to get going on your own, makeeverysale.com, the on-demand course. And then the weekly course, actually just did that again today. That is at theimplementors.com. Come plug in, ask your questions. You know, whoever speaks up, it's like one-on-one coaching, except you're going to do it in a small group and we're going to record it. All right. But only those in a group get to see it. But you do get to ask your own questions very affordably. Half off if you join for the year. Okay. So avail yourself of that. And now let's bring on Matthew. Matthew Pollard, all the way from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, author of The Introvert's Edge to Networking. Work the room, leverage social media, develop powerful connections. Welcome to the Sales Podcast. Man, how the heck are you?
Mate, I'm ecstatic to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm doing terrific.
Mate, what is mate? Are you like South African? Is that Russian? What is that? What's that accent?
Well, you introduced me from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, so I guess I don't really sound like that, but I'm actually from Melbourne, Australia originally, and I don't think that mate would, you know, I couldn't say hello to someone without using the word mate at the end. It just would feel not me.
So are there rednecks and hillbillies in Australia?
So we have slightly different names, but kind of, yeah. I mean, we have, but it's interesting. So we use the word bogan. You know, as an Australian. So, but Bogan is proud Australian, but you know, they're happy to walk down the street, no shoes on. You know, they don't care how they dress. And gosh, if you think I sound Australian, you should listen to them.
Oh, so you mean they're basically Californians.
So yeah, not knowing enough about the demographic, but having been here 6 or 7 years now, I'd say you're definitely closer.
All right. Very nice. So I love your story. And, you know, we were talking before we hit record. There are a lot of introverts in the world, obviously, a lot of introverts, though, in sales. I tell people, I feel like I'm an extroverted introvert. It's like I love a good party, but I love to leave the party and go recharge, like with a movie, a nap, a book. Would you call yourself like a classic introvert?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of people, I mean, let's face it, the psychologists have overcomplicated it because maybe, you know, to get your research grants, you have to come up with a new way of defining things all the time. But for me, I mean, I see introversion a lot more simply than a lot of people. I mean, I don't get into sure, there's people that are classified as highly sensitive, people that are classified as shy. We can overcomplicate it as much as we want. But if we want to simplify it, it's really where you draw your energy from. Like for me, you know, I will go and speak at a networking event or speak it from stage or go and speak to someone and sell to them. And at the end of that, it doesn't mean I can't do it well. I mean, I think that's where people get it wrong. They think that because they're introverted, they can't sell network, public speak, lead. It's just not true. It just means like a kid at Disneyland, you can go and play on all the rides, but eventually when you get home, right, you want to hit the pillow and you're tired. For me, I want to put on a hoodie and watch Netflix for half an hour. You know, an extrovert on the opposite is they'll go and they'll speak at a networking event or whatever they need to do with people. And at the end of that, they're charged up and they're ready to go and, you know, do it again or go to the next event or the next party. So I think that to really simplify it, you know, if you spend time with people, whether you're really good at it or not, if you're tired at the end, you're an introvert. If you're charged at the end, then you're an extrovert.
Right. Very cool. So I want to get into a few points in the book, but I don't want to steal your thunder. We need people to go buy the book. But I do want to get into some of your background, though, that led into this. Responsible for 5 multi-million dollar business success stories before the age of 30. So were these businesses that you started and owned or you consulted or a little bit of both?
Started and owned. So, I mean, just different variations. I mean, one of the things that I learned really well is how to create a message that separates, how to niche down, and then how to create a sales system. And I think that, you know, for me, my life has been spent understanding that methodology, and now I teach to others. But, you know, I mean, I kind of fell into it. I mean, when I first started, I mean, a lot of people hear me on podcast interviews, see me speak from stage, and go, oh, it's easy for him. It's clearly, you know, he's a natural. I mean, but I had a reading speed of a 6th grader in late high school. I was horribly introverted. I had really bad acne. You know, in later high school, I had colored lenses because my parents actually got me diagnosed with this thing called Erlen syndrome, which means I put on this pair of magic colored lenses and I can learn to read. I can't read like everyone else, but I could learn to read. But what happened was I fell into sales really because of the fact that, you know, I got a job after, you know, year 12. We all agreed with my family that you know, unless I really knew what I wanted to do in university, that I would take a year off just to find myself because I wouldn't make it through. So I took a year off. I took a job at a real estate agency. I wasn't the guy out selling by any means. I was the guy in the back office doing data entry with this look on my face, really saying, you know, you don't speak to me. I'm here to find myself. But I lost my job 3 weeks in because they shut the business down. And next thing I knew that I was applying for commission-only sales roles, which you can imagine were terrifying for me as an introvert, but they were the only jobs I could get. And, you know, this was at Christmas time in Australia. So as you can imagine, I mean, trying to get a job in Australia at Christmas, I mean, we have summer and Christmas at the same time. We were just talking about this before the episode started, which basically means everyone goes on their summer Christmas holiday on the 20th of December, and they don't come back till the 15th or 20th of January. So here I am, you know, no job, applying for commission-only sales roles because that's all that's there. I applied for three. I got three interviews. I got three jobs. I was kind of ecstatic with myself until I got told by my manager, oh, yeah, we just hire everyone. We just throw mud up against the wall and we see what sticks, which sounds like a fun saying until you realize you're the mud. Mm-hmm. And but there I am. You know, that's I got 5 days product training and then thrown on this road called Sydney Road, Melbourne, Australia, and, you know, told to go and go sell. So
what were you selling?
I was selling door-to-door telecommunications, so business-to-business telco. So phone plans, internet, those sorts of things, 1-300, 1-800 numbers. And, you know, I went to walk in the first door, didn't even know what to say. And then, you know, took a deep breath, walked in anyway, was politely told to leave, luckily enough. Then I was less politely told to leave. Then I was sworn at. And, you know, my personal favorite, though, was always getting told, go get a real job. Right, it was the only job I could get. But door after door, this kept happening until I got to my 93rd door where I made my first sale. And I made about $70. And I remember I was ecstatic for about 45 seconds until I had my second realization for the day. I've got to do this again tomorrow and the next day and the next. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't okay. And I think a lot of people listening will do one of two things. Right. I think the world of the hustle mentality is growing. You know, we're just going to hustle it out. We're going to grind it out. We're just going to get through it. Well, if I had done that, then I would have relied on Lady Luck. You know, sometimes it'd be 105 doors, then it'd be 87 doors. It wouldn't get any better. I just have to hustle every day. Or I could have quit like 18 of my 20 training group did the following day. But what I did is I decided sales had to be a system. And I went looking for that system. And with my reading issues, I mean, as I said, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader. I couldn't exactly pick up a Brian Tracy or a Zig Ziglar book. But what I did discover was YouTube. And I typed in sales system and all these videos came up. And every day I just spent 8 hours out in the field practicing and then 8 hours at home learning the next part of the sales process. And just every day I'd get better and better. I mean, you know, soon I'd be 65 doors, then 48, then 12, and then 9. And then eventually I got it down to one sale every 3 doors. And I mean, if you were to fast forward about 12 months because of that, you know, I got promoted nearly seven times in the space of 12 months. But within 6 weeks, I got pulled into the office and I got told I was the number one salesperson in the company. It was the largest sales and marketing company in the Southern Hemisphere. So I'd gone from terrified to, you know, really being the number one in the company in 6 weeks, promoted 7 times in 12 months. And then fast forward just shy of a decade, I've been responsible for 5 multi-million dollar success stories. But it all came down to me learning sales as a methodology and then teaching it to others. And then eventually realizing that sales, there's a lot of heavy lifting that can be done by great marketing. So learning how to differentiate and how to niche. And that's what I call, you know, my 3 steps to rapid growth that led to the success. And, you know, that's really kind of what got me to what I do today.
Yeah, that's great for you. But you know what? I'm not in Australia and my business is different. So why am I listening to you?
Well, every business is different and absolutely exactly the same. So it's really interesting to see, you know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I consult with clients all over the world and it's funny how, I mean, there are small, I mean, Australia, New Zealand versus the US, there are certain different drivers for why people make purchasing decisions. But the things that don't change are the fact that people don't like to be, they don't like to hear you as a commodity. And I think that's one of the biggest issues that people have. I mean, when we go to a networking room and we say, oh, I'm a business coach or I'm a branding consultant or I sell insurance, the problem that you have is people go, oh, I need that. How much do you charge? Which leads us straight into a price conversation. Or they say, well, oh, you know, I had a really bad experience with an insurance salesperson in the past, or I've got that, I don't need you. And the conversation's done, right? You end up feeling like you've got to convince and cajole people. And actually, because I said insurance, and, you know, let's face it, if you hear the words I sell insurance in a networking event, right, your eyes want to scream because you're like, how do I get away from this conversation? I actually had a guy, Nick Jensen, who came to me, who sold insurance for an organization. And he said, whenever I speak to someone, I got into insurance because I felt like I wanted to help people. But whenever I say insurance, people scream and they're like they want to get away from me. They're like, well, what do I do? And I said, well, let's think about, you know, really coming back to a point of passion here. Why did you get into it? He said, well, I told you I want to help people. I said, okay, let's get a little bit less general here. Help people that make like $250,000 a year or people that earn $50,000 a year. He said, well, obviously the $250,000. I said, why? He said, well, they make more so they can buy more stuff. I said, well, that's not really talking about passion now, Nick, is it? So let's go a little bit deeper here for a second. What about the person that hustles every day through school, got into Harvard, got a C-level executive role working in a big organization, makes $250,000 a year versus the guy that starts his own business, hires people, and then makes $250,000? He said, well, the business owner. I said, why? He said, well, my grandfather owned a farm. He started his own business. He hired all these people. He made, you know, a bunch of money, but he never really prioritized himself. And then he got sick and he had to sell the farm and he ended up moving into this really small apartment. He said, I just watched my grandfather wither away and die in front of the TV for like a decade. I feel like those people need more help. I said, okay. What if then, instead of saying when you're at a networking event that you sell insurance, why don't you call yourself the hustle lifeguard? And when somebody says, well, what exactly is that? Then talk about your passion and mission for supporting the small business owners, the people that create things out of nothing, not lead to unhappy retirements or later lives because they don't prioritize their health and their safety through insurance. I said, then go into a story about how you helped your, about your grandfather or how you helped somebody else and how you protected them against this situation. Would that feel a lot more comfortable for you? So what he ended up doing is doing that. He worked for a large organization. It worked so well. He now has his own business that you're very successful helping those types of people. And what's interesting, and by the way, he's an American guy, but this same strategy won't matter if you're in China, it won't matter if you're in Europe, it won't matter if you're in South Africa. The same strategy works. When you go and meet someone and you say, I sell or I offer or I do, enter commodity word here, the problem is people automatically either disqualify you or say, oh, I need that. How much do you cost? You need to transform that into something that inspires interest. Then if you speak to everybody like Nick was, I sell insurance to everyone, you don't become the only logical choice to anyone. So because of that, knowing your marketplace, knowing your niche, Nick could then speak from a point of passion about how he helped small business owners. But what was interesting is even people that weren't small business owners, they felt his passion and they were like, oh my gosh, well, you know, I know that you only help small business owners, but would you consider working with me? Because so infrequently does anyone get around someone that's actually doing something they're truly passionate about. And then when you've got a great sales system, it just becomes so, so easy to drive them through that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So let's go back to your door-to-door sales. What did you do differently from week one to week six? How would you open? How were you received better once you perfected this? Was it who did you ask for? You know, was it your demeanor? Was it everything? I got to assume your posture was probably better. How you made eye contact, your tonality, but I mean, can you, I got to assume you can describe, you know, exactly what the switch was.
Well, I mean, so it was a ton of things. It was all of the things that you mentioned and more, but you know, just simple things, right? So I would walk in and firstly, I often get talking to the wrong person. Right. So I'd be having a dialogue with, and I remember conversations where I spent 30 minutes trying to get someone to be interested in what I would talk about. And then eventually they'd say, okay. And then they'd walk into the boss and say, hey, boss, do you want to change telecommunications providers? No. Okay. Sorry. He's not interested. And I'm like, what a waste of time. So a lot of times I was burning interest. So what I learned, and I still remember, I think my pitch was something like, you know, I'd get in, I'd start talking, and I'd say, you know, I'm here representing X company. We're trialing out a new savers package in your area. My job's really just to come out and see if you qualify for that. Are you the right person to speak to? Something as simple as that, using the word qualify, automatically got the person that wasn't the decision maker to go qualify. Oh, I don't know. Let me get the boss. So it made such a substantial difference. One of the next things that I learned is that if I went straight in and started pitching, then it didn't bear me great results. So what I learned is that, okay, I need to start asking better questions. And what I find is a lot of people just go in and start telling. They pull out the brochure and they start saying, you know, here's what I can do, here's what I can do. I'd start asking questions. You know, in telecommunications, it's super easy. You just have to get their bill. As soon as you get their bill, you're going to get the sale, right? So I'd ask questions that would then lead to something of them saying, you know, I don't know. And then I said, well, go grab your bill. I'll do a free bill analysis. And I do it right there and then. So it was really simple. The next thing is, and I was selling something that, you know, I sold a telecommunications company in America. It would have been equivalent to Verizon when Verizon was just getting started against AT&T, who had been there for a long, long time. So they launched into the market. And of course, they launched into the market as the cheaper provider, but everybody else, everybody that signed up and then realized their service was terrible and went back to the AT&T provider. So when I'd go in, they'd be like, oh yeah, we might consider you for the landline phone, but we're definitely not doing cell phones because we tried you in the past and it didn't work out. So they'd spend a lot of money on improving the infrastructure. But the problem is I could tell people all of this, but people are like, yeah, I've heard it all before. No, thank you. So what I realized is the power of story was one of the biggest things. I mean, firstly, people remember 22 times more information when embedded into a story. So the thing that's really, really powerful with that is I remember going up and selling against people that had like 10 brochures stacked up on their desk. And I knew they'd remember more of what I told them than probably all of those jargon salespeople before me. The second thing, especially for introverts, is what actually happens is it activates the reticular activating system of the brain when you tell a story, which means that we create this artificial rapport that we can lead into real rapport. And then thirdly, it short circuits the logical mind, which is the part of the brain that's going, that'll work for me, that won't work for me. You know, I haven't got time for this, get out. Versus the emotional part of the brain, which literally says story time and listens to the whole story, assumes the detail as fact, and then listens for the moral. So when people gave me that objection, I would say, this is what I call an objection handling cushion. I perfectly understand the last thing I want to do is waste any of your time. However, i.e., I've listened, I understand that you're busy, and then the word however. The word however, salespeople love using the word but. What I learned is when you say the word but, it's a disqualification term. So when you use the word but, it says, everything I just said before this, I didn't mean. Now let me tell you what I really think. Versus the word however that says, everything before this I did mean. However, I've got this additional thing of value that I want to add. For those that don't believe me, that are husbands that are married, go home and say, dear, you look beautiful in that dress, but, and see what happens. It's not going to work out too well for you. So then I would go into a story about somebody else that had the same concern, the same problem, and I helped them remember why they decided to go with this telecommunications company in the first place to save money, because a dollar saved is like $10 made, depending on what your markup was. And I said, now there's this service guarantee, and they spent all these billions of dollars on improving the infrastructure, so you get to have your cake and eat it too. At least that's what I told them. And then I talk about the positive outcome that they now had, which means I can deliver this moral of, so while I understand that you didn't get what you wanted before, you can now have that and know the service is going to be okay. And by doing that, I get people to a better outcome. So one of the things that I learned, the first and probably the most important, is that most people constantly say the things out of order. They get talking about price too soon. They don't ask enough questions. They don't tell stories. They think they do, but it's always customer wanted this, so we gave it to them. They're not deep, emotionally driven stories that have the depth of like how you met your husband or wife, where there's these emotional roller coaster elements to it. Once I realized that it was a series of seven steps and I put those steps in order, and then I threw out some of the things that just didn't fit, all of a sudden, I noticed that my sales doubled. And I mean, that's why I tell people, I mean, my publisher hates me when I say this, but, you know, I tell people all the time, they don't need to buy my book. If they just download the first chapter at theintrovertsedge.com, they'll get that seven-step structure. And if they do, if they just put everything in order and, you know, throw out what doesn't fit and fill in the gaps, which is always going to be around great questioning and great storytelling, then they'll easily double their sales in the next 60 days.
Very nice. So you're selling with them and you become number one. How long did you stay with that company?
So I stayed with them just under a year. So it was actually funny. So what happened is, so there was that 6-week trajectory. And when I got called into their office to, you know, get told that I was the number one in the company, I thought I was in trouble because, I mean, I was the quiet guy that used to hand in my paperwork downstairs and then go up and hear all these boisterous salespeople talk about how tough the market is getting, especially around Christmas time. So then all of a sudden they said, you're the number one in the company, so we're going to give you a team. So next thing I knew, I've got this team of 20 people. I don't know why they think that just because you can sell, you can manage, right? I had no idea what I was doing. I got given 20 people. They all quit within 48 hours. And so I went back to YouTube and I learned how to manage. And then what happened was I then actually got pretty good at it. I got the nickname the Young Anthony Robbins in my organization because I used to run these little seminars, which were easy because I would just be taking people through the philosophies that I was learning and taking people on each step throughout the week of how to handle their sale better. But what would then happen is I got promoted too fast. And what I learned about the organization that I worked within is that every time you get promoted, you get a little bit, you get less time to go out and sell yourself, but you get more of a chunk of what everybody else was doing. So, but what would happen is I would get promoted and then that would happen. And then I'd get my team to do really well. And then I get promoted again. And then I got promoted from Melbourne to Adelaide, which means I got no commissions off any of the people that I'd set up. And now I had to start an organization again. And then I got moved back to Melbourne. And it just got to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm going to go and start up my own business. So my first business was actually a telecommunications company. Within the space of 3 years, we became the number one brokership for B2B cell phones in the country.
Very nice. So you're kicking it. When did you start doing your own thing? And did you do it on the side?
So I started working in this business. I started working in telecommunications in the end of 2002. I was 18. I turned 19 working in that business. It was just before my 20th birthday. I started my own business.
And was it in that same space?
Yeah, it was in telecommunications. As I said, we built the largest broker for B2B cell phones.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so, I mean, telecommunications, I think a lot of people do that. You know, they start a business and I have to say, and one of the things I tell people all the time is, you know, building all these different successful businesses sounds great. But the reason for that is, I mean, the first business, I could have stayed in that my whole life. I was making great money. But it was just miserable. Like I just didn't love, you know, I didn't love talking about call rates. And I think this happens to a lot of people, you know, that they, so what happens is they sell something for a career and then they go, okay, I'm going to start my own business. So they end up starting a business that they've done for the career. So for me, it was a logical choice to start a telecommunications company. But, you know, I remember winning an award that was the Young Achiever in 2007. I went back to my house and I'm like, you know, I was in an apartment, 270 degree views. Like I was making amazing money and I was miserable. I was like, if this is what success looks like, I mean, you can keep it. So one of the things that I tell people all the time now is you really can create a rapid growth business out of anything, but there's nothing worse than a rapid growth business with customers you don't like and a business you can't stand. So for me, one of the biggest things that I try and get people to understand as well is if you're going to start your own business, the first thing you need to realize is that most people tend to inherit their goals from their mother, their father, their drunk roommate they had in college. They just hear these things. They're like, that's what I want. I'm going to spend the rest of my life charging towards that, but they don't think it through. So for a lot of business people that go into business for themselves, they struggle to muster the fire in their belly to go after it and actually go and achieve it for themselves. And they wonder why. And the answer is they're not actually passionate about what they're doing. Or they actually do break through that, they hustle through and then they get to success. And they're like, what was this even for? Like, I'm not happy. And that was me. So, I mean, I'd spent a large amount of my life really, you know, well, a couple of years really, how would I put it? I was trying to prove to everyone else that I was worth something because I had not achieved success. You know, everyone my whole life had said, you're the slow kid, right? You can't read, you can't spell that well, right? You're never going to amount to anything. So when I started to achieve and I started to make money, it was like, I'm going to prove everybody wrong. And then, you know, I think, and, you know, whether you talk about the Maslow hierarchy of needs or whatever it is, I think when you get to a certain point, you look back and you're like, what did I do this for? So one of the exercises I always suggest people check out is I've got a podcast called The Better Business Coach. And in one episode, it's episode 17. It's called Forget About Goals. Why is the key to success? And in that episode, you know, what I really get people to do is break down, you know, three business goals or three career goals and three personal goals. One selfish to themselves, because that's the one that's going to drive them. And I get them to write down those goals. And then I say, that's really a means to an end. The most important part is summarizing each one of those goals in 250 words or less, including why it's important to you. And what I find is that a lot of high achievers are really good at writing their goals, but when they write down why it's important to them, they struggle to come up with one or two lines of text. And the reason is it's really not important to them. So it forces them to go back and rethink. I mean, I know now the business that I'm in, right, the level of passion I have for it, you know, this is my hobby. I love doing it. I do it for free. It's great that people, you know, pay me to do it. Right. Where, you know, the first business, it got to the stage where, you know, I really just didn't enjoy, you know, getting up and doing it. So for everyone that's listening at home, if you're in a, you know, and I talk about this in the book, the strategies that I give you actually give you an advantage over everyone else. But don't sell a product you don't believe in. Don't sell a product that you can't stand. And don't work in a business that you own selling a product that you don't really just love doing. If there's so many products and so many opportunities out there, you really can, you know, create a rapid growth business that you love or create an amazing income selling a product that you absolutely love. And when you have that, you'll end up selling more and making more, right? Because you're not dragging yourself out of bed every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is good timing. A friend of mine sent me her goal planning worksheet. You know, we're recording this December 22nd. So, you know, it's a good time to be doing goal planning, goal setting. And I've written goals over the years and I stumble across them. Sometimes I keep them in front of me. Usually I don't. But this document, it's a lot of blank space to write, but still it's 42 pages. And I'm like, holy smokes. Who's filling out a 42 page goal planning worksheet? Because I think we do forget about the why. There, especially with the internet and social media today, people, I feel like they don't think they're any good unless they have, you know, a car that's six figures, maybe mid six figures, you know, unless they've, I don't know, do a fancy photo shoot every month. It's just so much material things, but I know, cause I talk to these people, like they call me, they message me behind the scenes. And it's like, they're just sad people.
I mean, that's the thing that I see all the time. So, I mean, people create this Rolodex of things that they love. And by the way, I mean, there was this study around the millionaires out there. Most of them are actually driving pretty cheap cars. Right. It's the people that make no money that feel like they need to have the Mercedes in the driveway so that they, it was Will Smith's quote, people, you know, spend money they don't have to buy things that they don't need to impress people that they don't even really like. And I think that we've created this society like that. But I mean, if you were to ask people what it is that they want, so often people say, I want to create $1 million business by the end of the year. And I'm like, well, hang on a second. Firstly, it's October and you've made $27,000. But secondly, didn't you say you wanted to get into this business so you could spend more time with your daughter? And your last job, the job that you left, didn't that only pay you $50,000 a year? It's like, okay, so why don't we focus on in the next 4 weeks, let's just get you to the $50,000 that you were earning. Once we get to that point, firstly, what you're willing to trade off will change. That desperation will go away. Because when you're desperate, you while it feels good to say I'm creating $1 million business, when you're desperate, you're willing to do anything for money, right? So when you get to a little bit, and actually I have a great example. So you asked me originally who was Derek Lewis on the cover of my book. And you know, when Derek first came to me, he said to me, Matt, I want to make $1 million. And he literally did make, he reached out to me, it was October. It was he was made $27,000 in 2013. He'd only made $12,000 by October of that year. And he's like, well, I want to make $1 million. I said, Derek, do you even, firstly, you wouldn't know how to spend $1 million if you got it. Secondly, why do you actually need it? And then thirdly, you don't believe it's possible. So here's what I would suggest. Firstly, tell me how you were going to earn this money. And he said, well, I'm going to have 10 ghostwriters. He was a ghostwriter. I'm going to have 10 ghostwriters working for me, all charging $20,000 a book. They're going to do 10 books each. they'll make 100,000 a year, and I'll have 10 people make it where I'll make 100,000 off each of them. I'll make $1 million. I said, okay, what's your, what I call your independence goal, which is not enough to be living on champagne and caviar, but enough that you're not living on bread and gruel. And he came back with this number of 57,000. I said, great, let's get you there first. Well, we worked together and he hit that. I mean, he hit 40,000 within 2 weeks. He hits 80,000 within the space of 8 weeks. As soon as he came back to me, I said, so do you still want to have 10 people working for him? He said, oh gosh, no, the last thing I want to do is have all these people that I've got to, you know, have reporting to me. That would be a nightmare. I mean, he's, I mean, if I'm an introvert, he's, you know, definitely an introvert. And so he said, I just don't want that. I said, great. So what's your next goal? He said, I want to make 120,000 because I want to then open up a retail store that sells books and has all these meeting centers. I said, okay, let's get you to that. Well, he had 120 by the end of the year. That's 4 months. When he got to that, I said, do you still want to have the retail store? He said, gosh, no, I'm working with authors in Switzerland, in London. My family's traveling with me. I don't want to have this thing that I've got to keep coming back to check up on. What people are willing to do, what people are willing to trade off, and what people consider as opportunities shift as you earn more money. So what happens is when you set this $1 million goal, a lot of people don't even look up until they get there. Most people never get there. But if they do get there, they then look back and go, why did I work so hard for that money? So one of the things that I like to do, and I call them, you know, short-term self-efficacy goals. If you haven't hit a goal for the longest time, don't hit that $1 million. Don't set $1 million goal to hit in the next 3 years. Set, I want to achieve 50,000 in the next 6 months, right? Hit that goal, knock it out of the park, celebrate, then put your head up and say, what am I willing to trade off for the next financial goal? And what is the next financial goal? What generally happens is you end up moving much further, much faster, and it's the only chance of getting there. But secondly, you start to think what's actually important to you. Like for me, what I find is a lot of people in sales roles feel anxious all the time. A lot of people running their own business feel anxious all the time. And that's because they've got these goals that they think are important to them, but they're not aligned with what they're truly passionate about. They're not aligned with their why. They're not aligned with their driving mission in the world. And what's interesting, the story I gave you of Nick, you know, when he was selling insurance, you know, he was always feeling uncomfortable in the networking room. But if you were to ask what he was passionate about and what mission he was on, now he's got that alignment. He feels so much more comfortable and his goals all reflect that. So it's so important because in neuro-linguistic programming, we learn we're presented with 2 million bits of information every single second. Our brain's a supercomputer, but it processes about 126. So what happens is we delete, distort, and generalize everything we see, feel, hear, touch based on our beliefs, our values, our past experiences. And a subset of that is our goals. So while I'd like to think I'm a great coach, in truth, just getting people laser focused on what they want and more importantly, why they want it, what truly matters to them, generally allows them to see opportunities that are right there in front of them. And more importantly, it stops them hedging because that 47-page goal setting exercise document probably had escape clauses. And if I can't do this, I want to do this. I'm going to try and do this at the same time as this. She's probably, you know, whoever fills it out, it's probably going to be running a marathon and making that $1 million business in the next 6 months. There's just not enough time for all of that because marathons take a long period of time to train for. You've got to be realistic. You've got to build your self-efficacy and you've got to actually do what you care about. Otherwise, you'll end up writing a list of, I'm going to have a Lamborghini, I'm going to make $1 million, I'm going to run a marathon, and I'm going to spend more time with my kids. And let's be realistic. No one's going to achieve all of that if they achieve none of that in the last 6 months.
What if all I care about is sipping bourbon and doing jujitsu?
Well, if all you care about is sipping bourbon, well, I'd hope that you'd like to sip bourbon with friends and not in a dark room by yourself.
Well, look, I realize that if I have my dog with me, then I'm not technically drinking alone.
Okay. Well, as long as you're comfortable with that, then I'll tell you how to achieve it. Okay. So if the thing is bourbon first, so, and this is exactly what I mean. So firstly, if you're sitting bourbon, where are you sitting? Right? Are you sitting in a house that you own? Are you sitting in an apartment that you pay for? Are you sitting on the beach in the Bahamas? Did you fly your dog over there? Or, you know, is your dog with you? Is your dog healthy? Is, you know, do you need to have money set aside for, you know, medical treatments for a dog that's quite not healthy because he's enjoying the bourbon with you, right? There's all these things. What type of bourbon do you want? Once you know all of that, you then need to say, well, how much does this cost? Well, this is how much it costs. There, now you have your personal goal of, I want to make, I need to pay myself this amount of money. Now, in your business goals, if you run your own business, you say, well, I need to make this much profit to be able to. Now, everyone says, I want to make this much revenue. There are organizations out there that will remain nameless that say you need to have $1 million revenue to become a member. I know people that make $1 million revenue and make less money than their secretary because it all goes. Right. Some people will say to me all the time, I want to sell 10 $5,000 products in the next 3 months. I'm like, okay, but what if you spent $5,500 on Facebook ads to get them? Or what if you spent, you know, $60,000 on a salesperson to get them? Now you're making no money. So what I get people to do is think in the terms of profit for their business. But then what are their other goals? Well, okay, well, then I need to have qualified leads coming in. Well, how am I getting those leads? And then what do? I need to have a sales system off the back end. So as soon as you say, okay, what I really want to do is sit bourbon on the back, you know, here with my dog, all of a sudden you can then work out all your goals around that. But if you then go out with a bunch of buddies that convince you that you need a Lamborghini, well, then you're going to end up working a lot harder than that. And then go, why am I working? Now I never get to spend any time sitting bourbon in my backyard with my dog. But at least you've got a Lamborghini that you don't really want sitting in the driveway, right? This is how people get deluded.
Well, but I need my neighbors to be jealous of me when I drive that Lamborghini.
Well, that is the other thing that's really interesting. When people set goals quite frequently, like I'll give you an example. When I worked in telco, I was earning extraordinary money and I bought stuff that I never even used just so when people showed up, I could impress them with those things. When I started to create a successful business, I bought, you know, a six-figure, you know, vehicle. I did all of the, I'm going to call them dumb things that you do when you first start earning money. I think it was Jim Carrey that said, I wish everybody got the opportunity to become successful and earn extraordinary money to realize how irrelevant it is towards your happiness. So what happens is people always live in this, I don't have. And then it's like, oh, I've got to impress. And I've got friends that are going through the first time they're earning money that are going through that cycle, right? Truly successful people don't care what other people think. They'll buy the $20 pair of jeans because they feel more comfortable, not the $300 pair of jeans because they've got the right logo and insignias on them so that everyone knows that they've got expensive jeans. Meanwhile, they're less comfortable. So you'll find that what happens is a lot of people set goals to impress others. They set goals to prove their worthiness. And the amount of times people fill out that exercise, and when you talk about the why, it's to prove to my dad that I'm not, you know, I'm not as useless as he says, or, you know, to show my boss that, you know, he was right to take a chance on me. Right. I mean, these are your goals. They should be about you and what makes you happy. The problem is most people have never really asked that question. Here's why. What happens is we sit there and go, what is it that's really important to me? Let me think about that. This is a deep question. It's really, oh, my phone's blinging. I wonder who messaged me on social media. Let me check that. Oh, and then an hour later, all you've done is play on social media. The problem is people don't take time to truly think anymore. Right. You really know what matters to you. And what frequently happens is you end up doing what matters to everyone else because you spend no time really thinking about what it is that you want. Now, there is a book that I'm going to say up front doesn't have the best book name, book title, and everything past chapter one I wasn't a big fan of. But the first chapter is brilliant, and it's called The Way of the Superior Man. And as I said, it excludes half the audience, you know, because females don't want to pick up the book, but I would challenge them to pick up the book as well. And I believe you can download the first chapter for free, but it talks about the fact that most people just spend no time thinking anymore. We all live in this world of, you know, shiny object, conversation, busy lives. Let's check our social media. We never spend time truly thinking about what we want and more importantly, why we want it. So if we really get back to that, I mean, I always suggest if you really can't think and people go, oh, I sat down for an hour and I couldn't figure out what I wanted. I'm like, well, then spend 3 hours, right? Go and take a weekend for yourself. I mean, this is your life of activity. Is it not worth a couple of hours a day just by yourself to think about what actually matters to you and what's and why you want things?
The Way of the Superior Man. I've never heard of that. Is this David Deida? What is it?
That's the one, David Deida.
Interesting. So just chapter one, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, if chapter one gives you value, maybe buy the book, because I bought the book because I felt like chapter one paid. You know, that like some people, like I'd like to think people get a bunch from my books, but I think that, you know, what the chapter one will give you might make it worth the $10 Kindle book at least.
That's funny. Well, man, I think you duped me. Are you really an introvert?
You know, it's interesting. So people ask me this all the time, and it's always I mean, this is what I try and highlight to people all the time, right? People think that introverts can't be successful. It's like we're second-class citizens. And the truth is that an introvert's path to success is just different to that of an extrovert. It doesn't mean we can't network. It doesn't mean we can't sell. Some of the best podcast hosts in the world are introverted. Ivan Meisner, the founder of BNI, the world's largest networking group in the world, was an introvert. Zig Ziglar, the guy that you couldn't get off the stage, was an introvert, right? All of these amazing people, Jeb Blunt, the guy that wrote the foreword to my second book, right? The Introvert's Edge Networking, he's an introvert. He was happy about me kind of finally exposing that a lot of these sales leaders out there, you know, they're introverted. And I think that that's what happens. We see someone that's successful in a podcast interview from stage being energetic. I mean, what's coming out right now is my passion, but also, while it seems like, and I hope that to everyone else this has been valuable and feels like an organic conversation, I'm well practiced, right? Everything that I do, that everything that I brought up today, this isn't the first time that I've said it. These are all things that I've rehearsed, I've planned, and I've prepared for. And that way I can have an organic conversation. And this is around my topic matter, what I love most. So it just becomes super easy. But the thing we have to stop doing is saying introverts, anytime you see someone successful, we've got to stop going, it's easy for them, they're an extrovert, because they likely will be an introvert. I mean, you know, a lot of people go, oh, I don't want to practice things, that's going to sound too scripted. I'm like, well, firstly, Leonardo DiCaprio has been in some amazing movies. And when he delivers a line, it sounds authentic, even though he's not even portraying himself. And you get to enjoy, you know, his part. And you're just trying to portray the best version of yourself. I mean, but he's an introvert. Bill Murray is an introvert. Tom Hanks is an introvert. Just everybody that you think. I mean, Oprah Winfrey was an introvert. Ellen DeGeneres is an introvert. All these people that just don't seem introverted absolutely are. And that's what we've got to stop doing. We've got to stop saying that, oh, you're really chatty on a podcast. You're really, you know, direct on podcast interviews. You're great at sales. You must be an extrovert. Often it's not true. And we've got to start, you know, confronting that stigma every chance we get.
Yeah. Very cool. Man, so good. Very interesting. You are, you're the second guest in a week. So last Tuesday I had Bob Mesta on. He had 3 traumatic brain injuries before he was 7, and they didn't realize it caused them to be dyslexic. So he couldn't read. And he's gone on, produce, consult, whatever, launch 3,500 products, written multiple books. Should I just stop reading?
Yeah, I think it'd be helpful. So, you know, I have to tell you, so my first book, I mean, I didn't think I was going to be able to pull it off. I didn't want to write it. It was only because I literally had been, what happened is I deliver a keynote presentation called Rapid Growth, the Lazy Way. And I talk about differentiation, which is, you know, having your version of the hustle lifeguard, or in my case, the rapid growth guy, picking your niche, which, and then, you know, developing a sales system. And before I went into sales system, I talked about my personal story. And I have so many introverts that come up afterwards going, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I can sell as an introvert, right? Thank you for letting me know that. And I kept saying to people, every sales influencer I knew, somebody's got to write a book on introverted sales. And everyone went, Matt, no one's going to buy a book on introverted selling. I mean, if they now knew that it went on to sell 40,000 copies and had been translated into 10 languages, maybe they would have reconsidered. But, you know, back then, everyone thought no one would buy one. And so what happened is when I worked with Derek and I took him from, you know, 12,000 in October to 120 by the end of the year, just shy of 300 the following year, he's like, Matt, you've got to put this into a book. And I mean, he was a walking case study. He was a ghostwriter himself. So I went, okay, let's do it. And we worked hand in hand together. He actually shares his own personal story in the first book. And, you know, the second book that came out, you know, I was a lot more, you know, a lot more involved in that. And I actually now feel like, as I was saying to you before, the third one that will come out, you know, will be mostly written by me. But I just, for me, I feel that I don't want one word on the page that doesn't need to be there. So I'm very, you know, I like the writing style to be very concise. I like stories because, you know, so this book and my first book both read like novels. Right. But that was always the focus. But, you know, both this book, the Introvert's Edge to Networking, and the first one, The Introvert's Edge, both focus on this narrative style of sharing real stories of real people that obtain success, which that writing style was because I love listening to Audible books. And I'm always, you know, I consume tons of books on Audible. So the thing that I will say is just because I haven't read a lot of books doesn't mean I haven't listened to a lot of books. And I listen to them on three times speed, because I mean, Australians talk fast, we listen fast too. But for me, what you'll find is that because of that, I've got, you know, I've consumed a wealth of information, and that's why I can now dilute that into books. So I think that when I first started, there was no Audible. YouTube was great, but it left us disadvantaged. But with the world of podcasts and audiobooks now, I mean, a lot of times the people that like to read actually end up disadvantaged because they can't read as fast as they can listen, and they can't, you know, churn through content when they're walking dogs, taking people out, you know, taking the kids to school, those sorts of things. So I don't see it as a disadvantage. And I think that the way my brain functions is based on efficiency, about synthesizing the information that because I had very little information I had to synthesize when I was younger. Now I have a wealth of information that I synthesize, but those skill sets allow me to still apply. So I wouldn't suggest stop consuming information, but if you're a reader, you definitely might want to consider, you know, the other mediums. And, you know, my audiobook for The Introvert's Edge to Networking, I actually put a 25-minute extra audio bonus in there just for the people that buy the audiobook, because I'm a massive supporter of the audiobook, you know, and the organizations that support the audiobook world.
Do we as humans, do we process information as well? Or do you find like maybe you have to rewind a little more often for the idea to sink in? Cause I mean, but it's true in reading, your mind can wander off, but like if I'm at the gym or something, I find myself like I got to rewind more often, sometimes just to make sure I heard it right and to have it sink in. So is it just a skill you just need to learn how to like listen and make sure you lock it in as you consume it in that medium?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, there are a few things there. So firstly, a lot of people buy the audiobook and then follow along with a Kindle so that they can, you know, take notes, and, you know, they offer discounts at Amazon for that. But for me, following along doesn't really work. So firstly, you know, a lot of people start with one, then they get to 1.5 and then 2x speed. You know, I started at 2. I got myself to a 3x speed. But what I do is I'll listen to audiobooks while I'm walking the dog, while I'm, you know, driving, while I'm doing certain things. And if I hear something that resonates, I'll just click the bookmark button and then I'll go back and listen to them. Now, when I'm sitting somewhere where I'm just listening to an audiobook, it actually means that I'm going through and I'm listening. And when something pops up, I click bookmark, I go back and I listen to that section. But what it is, I mean, let's face it, a lot of books, I mean, a lot of people say if you get 2 or 3 ideas from a book, it did justice. For me, a book is such an ordeal, it better give me a ton more value than that, which is why I'm so conscious on putting just straight actionable strategies in my books. But the big thing for me is that I can go through an entire 4-hour book in just over an hour. So I can go right through. Now, sure, I might get through an entire chapter and get one idea out of it. So when I hear that idea, I'll go, oh, let's back up 30 seconds, listen to that again and take a great note, right? But that to me is a lot more efficient. But what I always suggest in my way of kind of finding audiobooks is what I do is I binge listen to podcast interviews to listen to what authors that I'm really interested in. Then once I've got the pod, once I've found the authors that I'm interested in, I then download their books and listen to those. And then I go from there to their programs or their content that they have online. And then again, speech to text to speech, which is terrible listening to things in robot voice. But that's the way I go deep into certain ideas and concepts.
Yeah. Yeah, I listen to everything at least double speed, but I found if they do have an accent, I mean, British or Australian, sometimes I have to slow it down to like 1.75, 1.5, because it's a little harder, you know. But I sometimes will listen at double speed and then go back and listen at triple speed. Because once I get the concept, because people say, oh, can you do that, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I'm literally listening to it twice before you would listen to it once at single speed.
Absolutely.
You know, and the ideas do get in, and we do, right? We can process information much faster. So,
well, I know if I've read a good book, like, sorry, if I've listened to a good book, I'm listening to it at 1.5 speed, right? Because if I'm going through and I'm writing down the point every now and then, I stay at 3x speed and I go back and backtrack occasionally. But if I get to the point where I'm taking so many notes, I'll go down to a 1.5 speed. And then if I get to the end of the book, I'm like, well, clearly that book was super valuable because I've listened to it at that speed. So I love it when I have to slow down. It means that the book I'm reading is worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, very cool. All right, mate, where do we send people? Where do they go to learn more about you and to get your book?
Absolutely. So, I mean, you can go and just type my name into Google. I come up everywhere. I post a ton of free videos and content on social media. So feel free to connect, you know, and with me everywhere there. But to get access to the books, the first book on sales, you can access the first chapter for free at theintrovertsedge.com. And the second book on networking, you can access that book, the first chapter of that book at theintrovertsedge.com/networking. And I always suggest to people, you know, start with the first chapter because those will help you overcome your fears around selling and networking. It'll outline the strategy. And then, you know, that will be enough to transform what you do in sales and in the networking room. And then, you know, of course, it's my hope that you then, you know, double down into the rest of the book, whether it's audio book or whether it's the print book, and learn and apply the strategies. And there's a ton of bonus material that support them. We've got video implementation trainings that are provided free with both books to take you from taking the strategies from idea to implementation.
What social media do you like? I know you're everywhere, but are you finding one having better success, you know, in the business world than another?
Yeah. So I really like LinkedIn, as I'm assuming a lot of sellers that are listening to this. I feel like, you know, I really like LinkedIn, except for the people that don't know how to use LinkedIn yet, which are the ones that are sending us those spam messages.
Which is most people, it seems like, but I digress.
It's a bit of a nightmare at the moment. But, you know, for me, in the last part of my new book on networking, you know, my whole thesis around this book is I want to teach you how to network so you never have to go back into the networking room. Because my whole theory on networking is that you have to be the loudest if you can't be the clearest. And, you know, most people can't articulate the value of what they provide in 3 minutes when someone's politely listening. So they've got no chance online, which is why they resort to those spam messages we all see on LinkedIn. But to answer your question, I love LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn's an amazing platform. Instagram's not bad. I still, you know, have a lot of, you know, involvement in Facebook as well. And then we're trying out the new platforms, things like TikTok and even Pinterest. We're finding, you know, we get hundreds of thousands of views every month on Pinterest, which actually, I think we just hit 600,000. So, you know, we get a ton of different views there, and YouTube's great too. But LinkedIn, if I had to pick one, it would be LinkedIn at this stage.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine on last week as well, Erin Chase, she returned guest. She was on years ago. She started $5 dinners and she was chewing my butt because I'm not doing much on Pinterest. So twice in 8 days now, I'm told that. So I guess I got to do something on Pinterest.
Gosh, you might want to. It's, you know, it's funny. It's actually not that hard to do Pinterest. Like the amount of work people put in all their other social platforms, and we put a whole bunch of stuff out. The great thing about Pinterest is, you know, the way it's designed is to get great content out in front of people. So, you know, we get a ton. I mean, we've only started using Pinterest since, you know, we started to get ready for the new book launch. And literally we've grown it from 50,000 to 600,000, you know, views in the space of about 8 weeks.
On Pinterest?
On Pinterest.
Man, how much are you doing yourself? Is it the team that's executing your vision, or do you have your hands on it?
You know, it's funny. Pinterest actually doesn't require a ton of work. I have a team that helps me with things, but one of the things that I always tell people is that these days you can use technology, psychology, and strategy to get your ideal clients to chase you. If you've got the right message and you know your right niche, you don't actually need to work that hard. You know, a lot of people are producing podcasts every day, blog posts every week. The problem is, I mean, if you've got a bland message, then you have to be louder than everyone else. Like I said, if you have a strong message that speaks to the right demographic, you know, I was on the Ziegler show the other day, and he said, you know, I looked at your book and I was like, oh my gosh, we've not done a topic like that. We need to have Matt on. And that was great niching strategy with a great message, right? That's what gets you through the noise. So if you have that, a lot of times you can build an automated strategy that drives your ideal clients to you. So what I call, you know, I look at social in two different ways. I call what I call brand preservation or nurturing, which is when I'm not, you know, wanting to be out and everywhere. And, you know, for instance, if I didn't automate everything that I did, my team and I would not have had time to produce this book and get all the bonus curriculum ready for the launch. So when I do that, I put my business on, I call it life support. But basically what it means is it keeps serving up content from our, you know, repository of amazing content that we put a lot of focus on. Then when we get into launch, what we do is we launch all that stuff organic and we put a lot of effort in for about 2 months. And then we put that into our grandfathered life support system. So it serves up all that new content in an evergreen way, right? So what I mean by evergreen is it's as relevant today as it is in the future. So if you're asking me right now, well, Pinterest takes nowhere near as much effort as a bunch of the other platforms. But if you're asking me right now, we are doing some things manually, but you know, it takes less than an hour a day for everything that we do. Actually, I would say it takes less than half an hour a day, and you can batch it so that you get everything set up in a couple of hours on one day. And then you get it, you know, you post it organically and you can get a team member to do that. But in truth, once you get to a point where you have it all in a system. And that's one of the things that I always suggest. People use things like Hootsuite to share content, but then they're always rescheduling things. And it's a nightmare. There are systems like SocialBee, like CoSchedule, that allow you to continually build content into it so it constantly shares forever. And the great thing about that is, sure, if you're going to post three times a day, it's better to do it natively. So for the people that know SEO, social media well, they're like, oh, don't do that. It doesn't get as much traction. Well, in truth, I'm not the person that's going to take a photo of my donut every day. So I've got something to say on social media. So when I get out of launch mode, I switch off and I put everything back into automation. And sure, that means I don't get quite as much interaction, but I still get a ton. But the difference is I can then go back and build the next product and the next book and do the things that I need to do. And then my audience still remembers me. They're still reminded. It's still drawing customers to me. So it still works really, really well. So I really believe in automation in social media. I really believe that it's necessary, especially for those introverts that aren't going to want to be public citizens three times a day.
Yeah. But I mean, what I just heard right there is that you hate donuts. So I may have to just delete this entire interview.
Well, actually, I love donuts. We're loving duck donuts at the moment. I'm not sure if you've tried those, but impressive.
Nope. All right. So yeah, pull up your Pinterest. So this is amazing, right? You have 138 followers. In any other social media platform, that would be atrocious.
Absolutely horrible. Yeah.
But you have 598,600 monthly viewers.
Yeah. And what's interesting is it drives a ton of people to the website. So what happens is Instagram, people tend, they're less likely to follow you. Just like, you know, if you do a big fan of SEO, you can get yourself to be really well SEO'd for certain keywords. But they don't follow you. They're searching. The thing that people don't understand about Pinterest is a search engine. It's not a social tool, right? So what happens is people search Pinterest just like they search Google. So it's actually about search volume, number of viewers, and the conversion from Pinterest to your website. It's not about followers. Now, sure, followers are great, but you know, for us, that's what we're really focused on. We're focused on maximizing the search engine volume.
Yeah, very cool. All right. Well, I recommend everybody get the book, Matthew Pollard, probably easiest, huh? Just MatthewPollard.com and then find everything from there.
Absolutely.
Yep. Well, all right, mate. It's lunchtime for you. So it's past lunchtime and you haven't even been hangry with me. So I appreciate it. That's professionalism, man. You have stuck it out and I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you getting me on, mate. And it was a pleasure. So thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for coming on, man. Have a great day.
You know, it's a good interview when you are listening to it a second time, going over the notes, tightening everything up, and you get kind of lost in the episode. And a lot of time goes by, and I'm like, man, it's like, you know, it's funny. As I do these interviews, I'm taking notes, and just to speed up my own production time. And so sometimes I miss some of the subtleties as I take the notes. So it's good to re-listen to things. You know, Zig Ziglar always talked about, you know, listening to his stuff dozens of times, you know, 15, 20 times, because the idea was you needed to listen to it so much that you could finish the sentences, because then it becomes self-talk instead of somebody else telling you. And there's a lot of value in that, a lot of credibility in that. So that's why I talk about listening to these multiple times. When you find something, that nugget, make sure you can bookmark it. Make sure you write it down. Make sure you go back and listen to it and apply it. And there's a lot of good nuggets in that. You know, get his book. I've got all the notes in the episode and on my blog. So look up Matthew Pollard, and you'll see The Introvert's Edge to Networking, The Introvert's Edge, How the Quiet and Shy Can Outsell Anyone. He's got his 7 steps at The Introvert's Edge. So a lot of things. I'm linking to him as well on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and Pinterest. So wherever you hang out, go hang out there and tell him The Sales Whisperer sent you. All right. So how are you going to grow? It's 2021 as you listen to this. So we will be, golly, one day before the inauguration. All the chaos of 2020 and now 2021. It seemed like 2021 said, yeah, you think 2020 was bad? Hold my beer, people. So who knows what's coming? So all you have control over, though, is yourself. Your thinking, your actions. Are you putting one step ahead and moving forward? That's really all you can do. So are you surrounding yourself and filling your brain with hostile content, with emotional content, with angst, with anger? You know, how's that working out for you? You want 2021 to be a different year? Come join the group, okay, the Implementors, or get some one-on-one coaching for you, for your team, okay, over at thesaleswhisper.com. Hit me up, avail yourself of it, and you'll be glad you did. I guarantee it. Thanks for listening. I'll go sell something.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.